We'd like to start again with the Laicite prayer. And so if you will repeat after me, God, please lay aside everything I think I know about the steps, this book, myself, my disease, the meetings, and most of all you, God, for an open mind and a new experience and all these things. Please help me see truth. Hope everyone got a nice rest last night. I know, I think I fell asleep somewhere along 1 o'clock in the morning. I know Peter was gallivanting up until about 3-4 o'clock in the morning, so I'm not too sure how he feels. As I mentioned last night, the way it was shared with me is from the doctor's opinion up to page 23. We try to keep the focus on the physical aspect of this disease, this threefold disease. So I'm trying to focus, identifying with what the book says, with what took place in my past, in your past, as it relates to alcohol. And what I mean by that is what happens when I ingest alcohol into my system. What happens? Has nothing to do with my thinking. Nothing to do with my thinking. But what happens to me when I ingest alcohol into my system? Okay. Does my body want more? Can I control it? Can I control the drinking after a couple of drinks and say stop? Like my wife, have 1.5 drinks. Crazy. For me. Okay. But can you, but could I do that? Okay. And it's very important that we're looking at alcohol, and if you're, you, as Peter mentioned last night, if you think you're both, or you don't know, it's a very important exercise. It helped me very much the first time I finally went through this process. Because you see, we can't start a spiritual journey, which this is. We can't start a spiritual journey based on a lie. We have to find truth. And with that, I'll give you Peter.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Peter. I'm an alcoholic. God separated me from alcohol June 23rd, 1988. And again, I'd like to thank everyone for allowing me to be here this morning. Tom talked about the very beginning of what we're going to be reading is dealing with the physical aspect of this illness, this phenomenon called craving that separates me from the moderate and the hard drinker. And we will see from page 23 to 43, we're going to dip into the mental aspect of this illness, a threefold illness, mental, physical, and spiritual, and we will talk about sometime this morning, hopefully, about what goes on in the mind that brings me back to a drink. My mind will convince me to pick up a drink, and when I do, I experience this thing called the phenomenon of craving, this allergic reaction to alcohol, this abnormal reaction to alcohol. How come when I pick up a drink, I can't have one or two and walk away, that I keep going until it tells me when to stop? The other thing we'll experience as we go through step one, it says we immediately were powerless over alcohol, that our lives were unmanageable. Without power, we have no choice and no control. No power, no choice, and no control. As an alcoholic, as a real alcoholic, I have no input into the decision that's made for me by this illness called alcoholism as to when I'm going to drink or not. And that is part of the unmanageability. It isn't only unmanageability as far as how I'm living and the conditions of my life being in the grip of the grapes. But part of the unmanageability is not even knowing when I'm going to pick up a drink, but just knowing it's going to happen, and I cannot do anything to stop it. And we'll get into talking about page 24, which really confirms that idea, that I have no power, choice, or control against the first drink. And once I pick up, the allergy kicks in, I stop when it tells me to. We're going to be looking at, there's a solution this morning. And you'll hear in some AA meetings that it's an individual program. You'll hear different ideas about how to approach this, how to recover, and that's great. But according to my big book, it doesn't say there are many solutions. It says there is a one solution according to this book. And last night I referred to, in Doctor's opinion at the very beginning, he uses the words plan of recovery. There is a solution. It's a set of directions. This is one big prescription on how to get well, how to get free from alcoholism. So at the very beginning, I like you to circle the letter A here, where it says there is a solution. That's singular, not plural, one solution. Okay? And they talk about our fellowship here, and I think it'd be a good idea to dip into this a little. It says, we of Alcoholics Anonymous know thousands of men and women who were once just as hopeless as Bill. Nearly all have recovered, and I like you to circle the word recovered. You'll see this word appear over and over and over again. It says they have solved, and I'd like you to circle the word solved, the drink problem. Our fellowship, it refers to here. We are average Americans, all sections of this country, and many of its occupations are represented, as well as many political, economic, social, and religious backgrounds. We are people who would normally not mix. And if you just scan this room, many of us normally would not mix if we were out there. If we were drinking, the few of us be in fights, a few of us be dancing on on a table with a lampshade over our head. A few of us are trying to get cozy with each other. You know, there'd be a lot of things going on. In fact, I bet half of us wouldn't even visit the same sort of bars or even drink the same sort of drinks, right? Yet we walk through the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous, the great equalizer, and we're here and we're together on a common journey because of a common problem. Common problem, common solution. We are people who normally would not mix, yet here we find friendship and fellowship. That's indescribably wonderful, isn't it? It says, but there exists among us a fellowship and friendliness and an understanding which is indescribably wonderful. We are like the passenger of a great line at a moment after rescue from shipwreck when camaraderie, joyousness, and democracy pervade the vessel from steers to captain's table. Unlike the feeling of the ship's passengers, however, our joy in escape from disaster does not subside as we go our individual ways. And many times after something tragic happens and people bond together to pull themselves through that, they go their own ways. And some never speak again. We're brought together because of a fatal illness called alcoholism, and many of us commence shoulder to shoulder on this journey and we become lifelong friends. I spent some time in Minnesota about 15 years ago, and there's still some people that I met on this path who are still very much a part of my life. That's what happens here. The feeling of having shared in a common peril, and that is the allergy to alcohol. That is our problem, the common problem, is one element in the powerful cement which binds us. But that in itself would never have held us together as we are now joined. The tremendous fact for every one of us is that we have discovered a common solution, and that is the spiritual revolution, the spiritual awakening, the spiritual experience that we have in here, the methodology to get to that place. There was a group called the Washingtonians. They were around way before Alcoholics Anonymous started. And I forget the exact amount of people that would belong to this fellowship, but they were drunks like us. And they would give what they call testimony. They would qualify at a meeting. They had no steps and no traditions. They had one part of this. They came together with a common problem and shared with each other. Has anyone been to a Washingtonian meeting lately? No. No steps, no traditions. And they got involved in things they should have not gotten involved with, and they fell apart. But we have a common problem and a common solution, the spiritual revolution and the methodology we get to it. And our traditions hold this whole thing together. We're not going to talk about our traditions this weekend, but please let us not forget how vital they are to us being here this morning. It says we have a way out in which we can absolutely agree. And isn't it sad that we go to AA meetings and we can't absolutely agree on the common solution? That many times we'll talk about the information in this book and the room splits. and upon which we can join in brotherly and harmonious action. This is the great news this book carries to those who suffer from alcoholism. Am I someone who suffers from alcoholism? Well, when I got here, I did, and this book was certainly great news to me because finally I was presented with a set of directions to get free from alcoholism, which owned me. Page 18. Last night I talked about a lot of this information we could bring to current, where we are currently, I ought to say. And I'm going to read page 18 in a couple of different ways. First, when we first walked in here and where we are now. It says, an illness of this sort, and we have come to believe it an illness, involve those about us in a way no other human sickness can. If a person has cancer, all is sorry for him and no one is angry or hurt. But not with the alcoholic illness. For with it, there goes annihilation of all things worthwhile in life. It engulfs all whose lives touch the sufferers. So my book already tells me here that it doesn't only affect me. Anyone I come in contact with is taken in by this thing called alcoholism. We affect everyone we come in contact with. A book later on says, we're like tornadoes roaring to the lives of others. We leave damage and debris. Here it tells me it engulfs all whose lives touch the sufferers. Whose life did I touch when I was in the grip of this illness? Who did I come in contact with? Chances are, I harmed them. It says it brings misunderstanding, fierce resentment, financial insecurity, disgusted friends and employers, warped lives of blameless children, sad wives and parents. Anyone can increase the list. That's on our way into Alcoholics Anonymous when we get here. To bring it up to present, am I doing any of this stuff? Am I causing any of this stuff in Alcoholics Anonymous, separated from alcohol right now, currently? Am I bringing misunderstanding, fierce resentment, financial insecurity to others or my family, disgusted friends and employers, warped lives of blame and children, sad wives and parents? Am I causing any of that stuff? That's a yes or no answer. Because if I am, chances are I'm in here untreated, running around Alcoholics Anonymous, sound asleep, thinking I'm awake, causing things like this, still spending rent money on my little plans and designs, you know, not contributing to my family. Tom talked about last night, you know, spending all his time at work and at meetings and forgetting his family who was left in the wreckage of what he had caused. Our book talks about taking this stuff into our homes, occupations, and affairs. Next paragraph says, we hope this volume will inform and comfort those who are or may be affected. There are many. We'll skip down another paragraph to the squiggly writing, italicized, which is usually means it's kind of important. It says, but the ex-problem drinker, this is almost, if you're looking for a sponsor, does he or she have some of this? It says, the ex-problem drinker who has found this solution, who is properly armed with facts about himself, they know what their truth is, can genuinely win the entire confidence of an alcoholic in a few hours. Bill sitting down with Dr. Bob is a great example of this. Until such an understanding is reached, little or nothing can be accomplished. How many times have someone sat to me and talked to me who weren't alcoholics when I was out there using, and I would automatically size them up and say, but you're not like me, you're different than me. You're not an alcoholic. You don't know what it's like to be me. And then one day, a real alcoholic was put in my path, and a guy by the name of Vince D. from Manhattan. And I sat at his table for about 5 minutes, and he had me, because he experienced exactly what I experienced. Different places, different people, different consequences, but it was all the same, because he suffered from this threefold illness, and it took him to where it took me. He spoke, as Dr. Bob said about Bill Wilson, my language. That the man who's making the approach has had the same difficulty, that he obviously knows what he is talking about, that his whole deportment shouts at the new prospect, he is a man with the real answer. Am I showing up to a prospect with this? Do I have an answer? Am I armed with the facts? Do I know truth? Am I giving a message that has depth and weight and credibility by my actions? In fact, I ask you this weekend not only to see me for the words I speak, but see me for how I be. It's so much more important than any words we speak, what we see with our own eyes. And that's what this is referring to. Someone's deportment, how they be. that he has no attitude of holier than thou, nothing whatever except a sincere desire to be helpful, that there are no fees to pay, no axes to grind, no people to please, no lectures to be endured. These are conditions we found most effective. After such an approach, many take up their beds and walk again. Page 19, I'd like to go to that first paragraph, and we'd like to skip down two sentences. It says, we feel that elimination of our drinking is but a beginning, and yet so many times we hear, as long as we didn't pick up a drink, we're a winner. And my book tells me over and over again, that's just the beginning. In fact, our book constantly says, you know, next, now, this is just the beginning. Elimination of alcohol is a beginning, not the solution, not the end. And then some very powerful words here that we referred to last night. A much more important demonstration of our principles lies before us in our respective homes, occupations, and affairs. It does not say in our AA meetings. We should be doing that anyway. But we need to take this home into our occupations and affairs.
By the way, my name is Tom Needham. I'm an alcoholic. Let's just skip down to the bottom of page 19. There's one, two, about the middle of the paragraph, it says, nothing would please us so much as to write a book which would contain no basis for contention or argument. We shall do our utmost to achieve that ideal. Most of us sense that real tolerance of other people's shortcomings and viewpoints and a respect for their opinions are attitudes which make us more useful to others. When I first experienced the spiritual awakening on this path, going through this process, as I mentioned last night, after bouncing in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous for 20 years, it was like I was walking around and my feet were off the ground. And as I mentioned last night, I took this book and during his talk last night, I would do anything to make sure that you got this message that I got. And I had no tolerance otherwise, even in my own home. My wife, who already spent 20 years in the fellowship of the Al-Anon family groups, and I'm going home, and I'm telling her, you got it all wrong. And it came about that she had a friend in Al-Anon that she shared this with, and her husband was in AA, and her husband came to me, and he basically told me to keep my mouth shut. So I follow the directions, because she has her path. But at the top of page 20, it's an important spiritual principle for me on this path. It says, our very lives, my whole life, as an ex-problem drinker, depends upon my constant thought of others and how I may help meet their needs. It's not about me anymore. It's not about me anymore. Right? It doesn't mean that I'm not saying I have the ability to think any less of myself, but my constant thought should be of others, trying to help them. Because any time I thought of me, I was always in a jackpot. And nothing I ever did worked as far as getting me to that place of ease and comfort, with the exception, of course, when I followed the directions in this book. It goes on to say, you may have already asked, why is it that all of us became so very ill from our drinking? And this describes somewhat what recovers. Doubtless you are curious to discover how and why, in the face of expert opinion to the contrary, we have recovered from a seemingly hopeless condition of mind and body. If you are an alcoholic who wants to get over it, what's it, that hopeless condition of mind and body, you may already be asking yourself, what do I have to do? What do I have to do? Do I just show up at meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous and hope the steps off on the sheet are going to dwindle down and come into me through osmosis? It's not going to take place. It talks about that next paragraph. It's a good exercise to find out. We talk about the choice. How many times people have said to us, can I take it or leave it alone? Can I just quit? Can I handle my liquor? And as Peter mentioned last night, if you think you're an addict or an alcoholic or both, look at those separately. Can I handle my liquor? Can I handle my drugs? Do I have a choice? A lot of people come into Alcoholics Anonymous and they raise their hands. They say, I chose not to drink this morning. Well, if they chose not to drink this morning, why are they even there? Is my willpower weak? Could I stop if I wanted to? Can I stop for her or him? If the doctor told me that if I ever drink again, it would kill me. That happened to me very early on. I came back from out of the Army, back from Vietnam, and I'm out in Chicago taking the Geographic like Bill did up in Montreal. And I'm out in Chicago there, and I figure I need something more to calm my nerves than just getting up in the morning and drinking, because I'm trying to be a good actor and I don't want to smell that bad when I go into work. Okay. So I'm out there and the doctor is telling me, he's telling me, you know, your liver is pretty large and you're a pretty young man already, you know. Didn't mean anything to me. Doesn't mean anything to me. Because I must drink. I only have one solution on this planet to get to a place of ease and comfort. And that was alcohol. And it was always alcohol. From the age of 13 up to that time, which was only a period of about 8 or 9 years up to that point. It goes on to say, now these are commonplace observations on drinkers, which we hear all the time. Back of them is a world of ignorance and misunderstanding. People that don't understand, as Peter was just sharing, what we experience when I ingest alcohol into my system. We see that these expressions refer to people whose reactions are very different from ours. My wife Jeannie has a normal reaction to alcohol. She ingests alcohol into her system. She gets a little buzz. She has a half a drink on top of that first regular drink, and she's done. And she leaves the half a drink.
That's alcohol abuse.
And I have, it seems like a normal reaction to me, but for the entire outside world, about the 90% of the population on this planet, okay, I have an abnormal reaction to drinking. I ingest alcohol, and I thought for years, again, has nothing to do with my thinking. I thought for years that it was all here, as opposed that my body is different than Jenny's. I ingest alcohol, something happens, as they were talking about in the doctor's opinion. I experience something called the phenomena, unexplainable, this phenomena of craving. My body says more, and I must have more. And it doesn't necessarily have to be. I picked up a drink after 10 years. Okay. I didn't pick it up intentionally. I wasn't thinking about it when I got up that morning. But after nearly 10 years, I got out of my car on the Upper East Side of Manhattan, and I walked into a deli, and I had 2 quarts. And vaguely, I remember that experience. 2 quarts, 2 beers. And by the end of the week, I was up to a case of beer and a half a quart of Johnny Walker Red daily. And it progressed from there. I didn't drink that much 9 years prior, you know, on a daily basis. So we go into something that's very important. On the bottom of page 20, we're going to talk about three separate types of drinkers. The moderate drinkers have little trouble in giving up liquor entirely if they have good reason for it. I had no good reason for it. I had a lot of good reasons to drink. A lot of good reasons to drink. It was the solution. They can take it or leave it alone, not me.
They have choice.
They have choice. Then we have a certain type of hard drinker. Now, we have to be a little careful here and taking a look, because there's a line we're going to come up to on the next page that really relates to the difference between a hard drinker and the real alcoholic. Because I can tell you, from my experience, that there are a lot of people in Alcoholics Anonymous that are hard drinkers. A lot of people. And they'll tell people like me, just don't drink and go to meetings, and that statement will kill you. Because they're not, as my friend Earl will say, they're not finishing the sentence. Then we have a certain type of hard drinker. He may have the habit badly enough to gradually impair him physically and mentally. Do I? Yeah. It may cause him to die a few years before his time. But if a sufficiently strong reason, ill health, falling in love, change of environment, or the warning of a doctor becomes operative, this man can also stop or moderate, although he may find it difficult and troublesome and may even need medical attention. I've got a good friend of mine, actually, who was my boss. He's about to retire. This is a man that says he's between drinks. He hasn't drank for about 15 years. When I met this man, I knew of this man before I actually met him personally. He had a reputation. He was kicked out of every bar in downtown Manhattan in the Battery. In my industry, he had an extraordinary reputation of being a drunk. His wife was finished with him. His wife told him, if you drink again, we're finished. It's time they had a few children. He went out, didn't take that warning. He got drunk again. He came back home, locked the door. She did. Changed all the locks. He stopped drinking. Me and my old sponsor, Rick, he thinks that both of us are crazy. He thinks we're in church basements burning chickens. He's a hard drinker. He doesn't need to do what I have to do.
That hard drinker also has choice. Now they bring us to where we fall into, well, most of us anyway. Again, our book separates us from the other types of drinkers. It says, what about the real alcoholic? He may start off as a moderate drinker or may not become a continuous hard drinker, but at some stage of his drinking career, he begins to lose all, not some, but all control of his liquor consumption once we start to drink. They're talking about the allergy here. In Chapter to the Wise, our book refers to four types of alcoholics. I fall into type four. Chances are someone in that place will go to any lengths and identify with everything in this book and go to any lengths to recover. A type one, two, or three, maybe don't drink, go to meetings, maybe has a spiritual awakening, result of steps 9.5, maybe don't need to practice some of the disciplines. Maybe could show up at a few meetings a week and go home and never work with anyone. You know, maybe go to AA dances and everything is good. But as a type 4 alcoholic, the real alcoholic, I need to continue to grow in understanding and effectiveness because I don't have choice over the first drink. I don't have control as to when I'm going to drink again. I don't have any power to stop the drunk. This is where I fall into the type 4 alcoholic, the real alcoholic. It says, here's the fellow who's been puzzling you, especially in his lack of control. See how these words interchange, power, choice, control. He does absurd and incredible tragic things while drinking. He's a real Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. He's seldom mildly intoxicated. He's always more or less insanely drunk. His disposition while drinking resembles his normal nature, but little. He may be one of the finest fellows in the world. Let him drink for a day, and he frequently becomes disgustingly and even dangerously antisocial. I identify with that. On the top of page 21, they refer to, they're talking about the hard drinker, and I identify with this here in this way. Page 21 says, at the very top, second sentence, if a sufficiently strong reason, ill health, falling in love, change of environment, wanting of a doctor becomes operative, he can stop or moderate. I've changed my environment. I fell in love. I have fell out of love. I've had ill health. I've gone to rehab, and I had warnings of many doctors. And with all the sufficient reasons like that, I could still not stop or moderate my drinking. The cards would be on the table, and it would be very important for anyone in my condition to listen to it, to what the doctor was telling me. And I had many, many powerful and sincere desires not to pick up another drink. But because I'm the type 4 alcoholic or the real alcoholic, I still could not stop. I shared last night the love of a parent, a spouse, children, job, whatever it is. If you're the real alcoholic, it's insufficient. It's that fraudulent emotional appeal seldom suffices. So we're talking about, you know, drinking and cannot stop once we start. We set this terrible cycle in motion. I pick up a drink and I can't stop because there's a phenomenon called craving. My body craves more alcohol. Abnormal reaction to alcohol. My body wants more. So the question would be, well, then why start? If you notice it's going to happen to you once you pick up a drink and your body's craving more alcohol, wouldn't it be simple arithmetic to say, okay, I won't drink? Common sense. So where's the problem? Well, let's go to page 23 for a minute. First paragraph, three sentences down. Here's the problem. Therefore, the main problem, the alcoholic, centers in the mind rather than the body. Now, we've been talking about the body up until this point over and over and over again. We use the words allergic reaction, phenomena called craving, so many times since last night. But the main problem for me, like you, is in the mind because that's where all action comes from, thought. My mind tells me to pick up a drink and I listen to it and I can't deny it and I can't stop it. Again, I have no input into the decision that's made for me by alcoholism to go pick up a drink. I can't stop the drunk. Now you would think getting in terrible trouble on a Monday, Tuesday morning, my mind would say, we're not going to go there anymore. We're just going to stop. It was too hot. Where alcohol has been involved, we're strangely insane. Our book is going to tell us. You put your hand on a hot stove and you burn it, you're real careful next time you're going by the stove, right? With alcohol, we put both hands on expecting a different result. The main problem for me centers in the mind, not the body. Talked about this last night, so where's the solution? If the problem's in the mind, the solution really is in the awakening of the spirit. Well, here, don't drink and go to meetings. Just don't drink and go to meetings. Don't drink and go to meetings. And you hear it over and over and over again. As a real alcoholic, if I had the power just to not drink, why would I be here? I'd stay home and not drink. Why would I have to come to a meeting and learn how to stay sober, right? I would just say, that burned, too hot, I'm not drinking anymore. But I still go back to a drink. So don't drink and go to meetings is really not a solution, is it? That's one of those middle-of-the-road solutions. For maybe type 1 or 2, maybe the social drinker, maybe the hard drinker, maybe the moderate drinker, but not for a real alcoholic. It says if you ask him, and they're talking about us, why we started on the last bender, the chances are that he will offer you any one of 100 alibis. You ever hear this? I went out on a relationship. You'll hear that. I got drunk because of this relationship. I got drunk because I got fired from my job. That's delusion. The reason why you got drunk as an alcoholic is because you were spiritually bankrupt at that moment. You experienced maybe a strange mental blank spot, not being spiritually fit. Guess what? I'm walking back to a drink. The lights in the room get dimmer and dimmer and dimmer, and I'm blocked and I'm drinking. That's all we know how to do, is go back to a drink for ease and comfort. So I'll offer you a million alibis. I did it every time I went to rehab. What happened, Pete? You were in here last month. You're back again. Well, my dad was giving me a hard time. This girl told me she doesn't love me anymore. I got laid off from my job. And it went on and on and on. Delusional. Forget denial. That's a therapeutic word. Let's call for what it is. It's delusion, which is what my mind's going to feed me over and over and over again. The ego is going to do all this thinking for me and give me the answers for me. You don't have to do this work. You can control it next time. We'll go to rehab and we'll start over, get back to Alcoholics Anonymous. You'll hear it by a lot of new people in AA. If I pick up a drink, I know when I'll come back, I'll do it different this time. Who says you're coming back? You're around here a little while, you know about the people who don't come back. Bottom of page 23. The very last sentence. It starts off with says, and it's referring to people like us, he, or we can say we, have lost control. See how the words interchange power, choice, and control? They play with all three words. Over, they're interchangeable. Lack of power, lack of choice, lack of control. Remember we talked about last night, you'll hear, think the drink through. Watch what page 24 does to that. At a certain point in the drinking of every, not some, but every alcoholic, we pass into a state where the most powerful desire to stop drinking is of absolutely no avail. This tragic situation has arrived in practically every case long before it is suspected. The fact is that most alcoholics, for reasons yet obscure, have lost the power of choice in drink. Our so-called willpower becomes practically non-existent. We are unable at certain times to bring into our consciousness with sufficient force the memory of the suffering and humiliation of even a week or a month ago, or last night, or last week, or 2 days ago. We are without defense against the first drink. The almost certain consequences that follow taking even a glass of beer do not crowd into my mind to deter me. If these thoughts occur, they're hazy and readily supplanted with the old threadbare idea that this time I'm going to handle myself like everyone else, right? It'll be different this time. I'm not going to drink scotch. I'll drink beer. I won't drink beer. I'll drink scotch. Well, I'm out on a date with a beautiful woman, so I'm going to be a gentleman tonight. See how we identify with each other? I remember
every Friday night, I look good going out. Going out, I look good.
I remember trying to date this girl years ago. I would look at her and my knees would get weak, and I tried like crazy to get her to go out with me. Finally, she agreed to go out on a date with me. And we sat down for dinner, and they brought, you know, the dinner before you have dinner, they bring you drinks. So she's drank like a lady. She was an alcoholic. And I had one in me. And then they ordered another one. And then I started to feel nice. And I had another one. And suddenly she was in the way. And I was thinking, how do I get her home as quick as possible? And it was like weeks trying to get the courage to talk to this girl, finally talk to her and get her out, you know, with me to go for a date. And she's sitting at the table with me, and I'm thinking, how fast can I get her home, man? Because I got to go get, you know, fired up, and I got to go on as drunk. And I knew it was going to happen. Happened all the time. It says the alcoholic, if these thoughts occur, they're hazy and ready to supplant it with the old threadbare idea that this time we shall handle ourselves like other people. There is a complete failure of the kind of defense that keeps one from putting his hand on a hot stove. The alcoholic may say in the most casual way, it won't burn me this time, so here's how. When I was a young boy, my mom would teach me how to take care of myself, teach me how to make sandwiches and clean clothes. And remember teaching me how to iron my clothes press my clothes. She says, one day you're going to be living on your own and you're going to have to take care of yourself, so I'll teach you. And I was a little guy, this high. And I would stand on a chair and she would teach me how to iron my pants. I remember putting the iron down one day, and as I was moving the pants, the back of my hand brushed against the iron and it burned like hell. And she put some cold water and ointment on it, and I remember I was crying and it was really hurting, a little blister on the top of my hand. I was about 8 years old. I'm 44. I was ironing my shirt this morning and I put the iron down. I was very, very careful not to burn my hand. You see, that's normal, rational thinking. If the iron represented booze, I'd have both hands on saying, geez, let's see what happens this morning. It won't burn. It's not that hot. That's what we do. Where alcohol has been involved, we're strange and insane. You would think someone like that is completely insane, isn't it? Right? They refer to the jaywalker in our book. Crossing the street, breaks his back, crosses the street, breaks his leg. Common sense would say, don't cross the street or be really careful. This guy runs out in front of a truck, you know. This is what we do. This is what we do. How do we get free of that? And here's another thing to consider. I was talking about earlier, bringing this to where we are currently. Okay, the drink problem has been removed. What other types of behaviors am I repeating over and over and over again, expecting different results? What types of behaviors am I experiencing right now that are bringing fierce resentment, misunderstanding, warped lives of blameless children, sad wives and parents, etc.? What type of behavior, and maybe I'm acting out in certain ways right now that my mind convinces me over and over and over to go back to, knowing it's going to kill me? Do I experience strange mental blank spots in here, in Alcoholics Anonymous, separated from alcohol, in other areas of my life? Food, money, sex, gambling, anger, fear, all these desprees we get in here when we fall asleep. We go on a sex spree. Oh my God. Who did I wake up to? I'm supposed to be on this path. Who is this person? Or other areas that we get. I can't tell how many guys sit with me and talk about problems with the internet. Going into those sprees. Food sprees. I was sober about a year, a little over a year, and I was getting into binging on food and then purging. Binging on food and purging, and it was this little secret I had. And I was developing an eating disorder. And then I was confronted in a loving way by it, and I took some of these directions, and I got free of that. What about anger sprees? What about fear sprees? Don't we experience some of that once we fall asleep a little? What about that stuff? That's just as dangerous as some of the things we talked about here, because it's taking me back to a drink if I don't wake up, if it's not addressed. And while I'm in that spree, aren't I damaging the lives of others? If I'm in a state of obsession about anything other, or anything besides alcohol, aren't I damaging people in that place? Isn't it fatal to me and harmful to others? So I like to always take this work and put a spotlight on where I am right now, Saturday morning. How am I doing? What type of behaviors that am I acting out on that I don't want anyone to know? Am I the stage character again? You know, putting on my AA game face, walking in, I'm a spiritual giant, and I get home and I'm on my couch and my mind is running. And I'm acting out, you know, putting money in my pocket that should be going to the house because I got other things to do with it. I went through a thing where I was so obsessed with money, or early sobriety. I don't know if you guys have it here, but back home we have, you could call up and get your account information. You dial a number, put your code in, you find out how much it is. I was hitting that 3 times a day because I was so fearful of where my money was, where my checks were, checking my money, how much is in my pocket. It was bizarre. It was a state of obsession, which makes no sense anyway. How much could my money change from 12 o'clock to 2 o'clock in the afternoon? Right? But there I was on the phone and fear. Went on food sprees, went on sex sprees, went on anger sprees. All of it I experienced. It's bondage. So let's leave the drink aside for a moment and see where we are right now. And you could use that as we go through this book. Where am I currently?
Did I ever choose? Did I ever choose not to drink? Did I ever make that choice not to drink, but drink anyway? Bottom of page 24, when that sort of thinking is fully established in an individual with alcoholic tendencies, he has probably placed himself beyond human aid. So do you think anything human can stop that part of you that takes you to the first drink? Anything human. So I came into Alcoholics Anonymous in 1978, and I was separated from it. And like Peter was talking about, it was bizarre. I already shared last night, I was to a bunch of meetings. I was never home. I was either at meetings or on my job. And then after a few years of that, it was a woman, another woman. And then after that, it was gambling. After that, and all during that, I'm going to this thing called marriage counseling, therapy, and all of this stuff. And they're trying to tell me I have the power. I have the power. Of myself, my book tells me of myself I am nothing. And unless locked up, may die or go permanently insane. These stark and ugly facts have been confirmed by legions of alcoholics throughout history. But for the grace of God, there would have been thousands more convincing demonstrations. So many want to stop but can't. There is a solution. And on here on starts on page 25, they talk about a solution and what it takes to live on a spiritual basis. Almost none of us like the self-searching inventory, the levering of our pride, amends, the confessions of shortcomings which the process requires for its successful consummation. Do I believe that this 12-step process is what's required for me to change? And is this my only solution?
You'll hear in AA, the only requirement for membership is the desire to stop drinking, right? But here it tells me, in order for this process to work, there are certain requirements within the program. So they already separate now the fellowship from the program.
But we saw that it really worked in others, and we had come to believe in the hopelessness and futility of life as we had been living it. Today, is my life working for me today? When, therefore, we were approached by those in whom the problem had been solved, there was nothing left for us but to pick up this simple kit of spiritual tools laid at our feet. We have found much of heaven, and we have been rocketed into a fourth dimension of existence, of which we had not ever dreamed.
No longer dominated by the three dimensions, which we were when we got in here, and sometimes we experience in here, dominated by our emotions, the obsessions, and this thing called craving or the allergy. Those are the three things that dominate us when we get here, and sometimes when we fall asleep, we get them here also, or if we get drunk again. Well, we get free from that and rocket in. We're integrated with the spirit. We're integrated with the power, and we get free. Being rocketed into this fourth dimension of existence. That's freedom. That's what I was talking about last night, the difference between relief and freedom. No longer dominated by that. Or, you know, what I've come to experience is no longer dominated by the methodology in this book, because we can worship this book and we can worship the methodology rather than the power that keeps us sober anyway.
And the next paragraph is a great summary of the message, of what the message of Alcoholics Anonymous really is. And the great fact is just this and nothing less. Nothing less than this. That we have had deep and effective spiritual experiences which have revolutionized our whole attitude towards life, towards our fellows, and towards God's universe. The central fact of our lives today is the absolute certainty that our Creator has entered into our hearts and lives in a way which is indeed miraculous. I know today, as a result of this process, I know. I wasn't too sure before about God, but today I know. He has commenced to accomplish those things for us which we could never, never do by ourselves. I will take a 20-minute break.